Before we get started, we wanted to take a quick moment to thank you, our listeners, for 1 year of the Jambase podcast. That's right, we have celebrated our 1 year anniversary, and it wouldn't make much sense to keep recording this podcast every other week if nobody listened to it. So thank you from the entire team here at Jambase for tuning in and hearing what we have to say about all things live music, and to all of our fantastic guests that have sat with us this past year. If you like what you hear, we always appreciate your 5-star rating on iTunes, and if you have any feedback you'd like to share directly with the team, we can be reached at podcast@jambase.com. All right, now on to the episode. Hello, and welcome to episode 27 of the Jambase podcast. This week, I am your host, David Onigman. As always, we're going to get started with the rundown, where we recap the news of the past 2 weeks, and then we're going to hear a full band interview I recently did with the guys in Pink Talking Fish, recorded at the Hangtown Music Festival in Placerville, California. We'll get to that in a bit. First, let's see what's been happening these past 2 weeks in our orbit. Our observed trends of tours and festivals being announced earlier and earlier seems to continue. We haven't even finished our holiday shopping, and next summer's happenings seem to be coming more and more into focus. Starting off here, Dead & Company is here to stay. The band will embark on a 19-date summer tour next year. The six-piece announced the trek, which crosses the country and spans May 31st to July 6th. The news for fans of My Morning Jacket is mixed. MMJ took all of 2018 off besides a headlining appearance at their One Big Holiday Festival. It appears 2019 will also be a quiet year for the band, at least when it comes to live shows, as the Louisville-based rockers confirm their only 3 concerts of the year. Up first for the Jacket are 2 shows at Red Rocks on August 2nd and 3rd. Then the band heads to New York City for a performance at Forest Hills Stadium on August 10th. And that appears to be it. Kind of a bummer, but maybe 2019 we'll see a new studio album from the band, or maybe we'll just be waiting for more in 2020. I know we personally here at Jambase like it when MMJ is on the road, and it was an interesting pairing this past year when both Wilco and My Morning Jacket, these bands that both I at least equate in my head as having similar positions in our scene, had such a light year. We expected both of them back on the road and filling festival slots and such, but Wilco's on their way back, it seems, with a European tour on the books and their Solid Sound Festival already announced. Well, anyway, we want to see you back soon, Jacket, but, you know, you do you. The 30th annual Warren Haynes Presents the Christmas Jam took place this past weekend at the U.S. Cellular Center in Warren's hometown of Asheville, North Carolina. This year's Christmas Jam was held over 2 nights and include performances from Marco Benevento, Mike Gordon, Dave Grohl, Grace Potter, Jim James, Government Mule, and many others. Haynes opened both concerts with musicians he performed with at the first Christmas Jam way back in 1988. Each show spanned over 7 hours, with proceeds going towards the Asheville area Habitat for Humanity. The action each evening was nearly continuous, as organizers used a side portion of the stage for tweener sets. Highlights were numerous and included Government Mule's Dark Side of the Mule tribute to Pink Floyd, Warren teaming with Grace Potter and Jim James for Gold Dust Woman, Grohl and an all-star band he put together debuting the Foo Fighters frontman's Play instrumental, Eric Church performing a number of covers backed by Haynes and other Christmas Jam musicians, Jamie Johnson bringing out the host for It Hurts Me Too, and Government Mule's guest-filled finale on Saturday night. A massive snowstorm hit the Asheville area on Saturday, leaving many attendees stranded in town on Sunday. Warren Haynes and Dave Grohl put together a pop-up snow jam at Asheville's The Orange Peel on Sunday night that featured a bevy of classic rock covers. An emotional moment came with Grohl behind the kit for a rendition of Nirvana's All Apologies that saw the crowd sing along in powerful fashion. And then there's some really big news from the Fish Camp. Trey Anastasio announced the formation of a new band, Ghosts of the Forest. So that's got Trey, Fish drummer John Fishman, Trey Anastasio band bassist Tony Markellis, also from Tab keyboardist Ray Pashkowski, and vocalist Jennifer Hartswick, who's also been a mainstay of Trey's bands, along with vocalist Solis. The band will make its live debut with a short run of shows in April. It's been well over a decade since Anastasio put together a new band. He's been sort of content focusing on Trey Band and Fish, but Ghost of the Forest changes that a bit. We don't know much about this project outside of a one-minute audio clip that's out there, but we've been told to expect new music and some level of production. The band's going to have their debut in Portland, Maine, and then has some shows in Philly, D.C., Albany, Boston, and New York City. We can't wait to hear what this band sounds like. The 60 seconds we've heard so far have been interesting, but this is was an announcement that was very light on details. We don't know if this band is going to perform all new music that we've never heard before or just some. We don't know if there's like some layered guitars on this 1 minute clip. Solis, who Fish fans may know from singing backup in the 2016 Halloween show where they did the Bowie record, she also is a great guitar player. Is she going to play guitar in this band? We do not know. Will there be more shows beyond this handful that's been announced? We'll all see, but it seems like it has been intentionally vague thus far. But we can't wait to hear what Ghosts of the Forest sound like. And certainly the pairing of Tony Markellis and John Fishman is an interesting one. I always have this thought when Trey first went out, that second tour he did with Tab, the first one with Horns, the one he did in February and March of 2001, I was at a couple of those shows, and I remember this time at Roseland where Trey was sort of like, they were playing, I forget what it was, some acoustic song, I think, and Trey was talking about why he had picked Tony and Russ for that band, and it was because they were just like these deep pocket players that were like, you know, not into solos or like, you know, being flashy or anything like that. Like, had Tony take a bass solo, he sort of kept playing exactly what he'd already been playing, you know. And Russ and Tony are incredible players, but they're like more that simpler, like pocket rhythm section. Whereas like Fishman and Mike in Fish are kind of the opposite, right? Like they're like pretty like insane, creative, not to say Russ and Tony aren't these creative players, but like their approaches are so different in like these bands they play separately in Trey with. And this band seems to be, is combining Tony, that simpler bass player, with Fishman, you know, that more dynamic and sort of active player behind the kit. So I have a feeling this stuff's going to be pretty fucking cool. Speaking of Trey, he is just about to wrap up his run of acoustic dates here. Myself and some of the other folks here at Jambase had a chance to check out the Oakland show. Listeners of the podcast may... if you happen to listen to the episode back in February, this is my second time seeing this format for Trey. I flew out to Cambridge, Massachusetts to go see a show at Sanders Hall back in February. So this was my second one. And a lot of what I said back then holds true. Trey seems to really love this format. He seems to be getting more comfortable up there a little bit. He still is a great storyteller. His song selection is always interesting. Not the night I went, but he played Bliss for the first time ever, the Billy Breeze instrumental track, also sort of not the. I think the Oakland show that we went to is the exception so far. I think at every other show this tour, he's been sprinkling in some of the Kasvat Voxt. Oh, I still don't know how to pronounce that. Tunes from Halloween, but we didn't get one in Oakland, but he's been playing a handful of those so far, making it very clear that all those songs are here to stay and stick around. Beyond that, you know, it was great. I believe I should have checked this before we recorded. I believe there's some added production this tour. Certainly at the show I saw in Cambridge back in February, I don't remember that big scrim and the colored lights and stuff that they were using throughout the show. So I think one adjustment this tour was just a little bit of more production, just a little bit of a light show, especially when Trey is putting on some of those loops and stuff, which was a really nice touch. And the Paramount in Oakland was a beautiful theater. One interesting part of the Oakland show was Trey, like, his first opportunity to tell a story of the night. He did Kill Devil Falls, he did Stealing Time, then he did Sleep, and he started to tell a story about Sleep and got about two or three sentences into it, and then he just stops and doesn't tell the rest of the story. He was starting to tell the story. We'll play the clip here.
Just thinking about that song when Tom and I were writing it, we had a big debate over one word. This is not that interesting, but it popped into my head. You know, it's supposed to be about being able to, like, having a dream and being able to, you know, be on that perfect line where you're, you know, you still see it, but you can't hold on to it. This is not gonna work, this story. I should just tell Peyton Hooten and get it over with. Hello. Hi, everybody. What are you doing up there? Hey, you guys sick of kale yet? Anybody else other than me? Sick of fucking kale? You guys sick of kale? Because I am. Anyway, that's much more interesting. My hatred of kale. Fuck kale. Fucking kale. Right? Fucking kale. Okay.
So that left us wanting more a little bit. So I wrote Tom an email and wanted to see if he could fill in the gaps of this story that Trey did not tell. And me and Tom got on the phone to chat about that. So let's check in with Tom and see what this was all about. Hey Tom, how's it going? Thanks for taking the time to chat with us here.
Absolutely, Dave. How are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. I'm glad we could get you so we can as Paul Harvey would say, get the rest of the story here. As we were talking about over email, Trey started to talk about a discussion you guys had about one word in the song Sleep, and then for whatever reason he abandoned ship and then started talking about kale and stuff.
I might be able to shed some light on the kale conversation, but I'm
cool. So we'll start with Sleep and then we'll do kale. So we were talking about over email. I think maybe it is a difference between I won't even get into it. So if there was a back and forth with you and Trey, a big debate over one word, what was the word and what was the debate?
Okay, well, here's my side of what happened. So I'm in New Jersey. Trey was playing in California. And all of a sudden, my Twitter, I saw a couple Twitter people asking me, you know, what song was Trey talking about? And honestly, I had no idea what was going on. I've been following his tour by looking at set list the next day. So actually Trey texted me about something else. And then I texted him back. Someone had told me he freaked out about a horse. He's heard an analogy about a horse having essentially fingers instead of feet, and I think that freaked him out, and so I sent him a picture of a horse with fingers. But we didn't actually get into this. Okay, sorry, I'm diverting from your question here, but basically the song Sleep, I do remember a debate that Trey and I had, and frequently when we do have a debate, it's because he will insist on, you know, either a word or a phrase that I may have just sort of written down, kind of just, you know, to get my concept across without a whole lot of thinking about the, you know, the specific lyrics. And he's good at catching those, you know. And so often he's right. He'll say something and I'll go, oh, you know what? That's much better, of course. But this one, it changed the meaning. So I know exactly what he's talking about. There is one word. So basically, sleep is, I can't describe the feeling when I'm in my bed asleep and then I wake up with a vision blurred and all my efforts are deterred to reconstruct this image lost. And so, you know, that's exactly That's no debate there so far. Those are the words. Now this next line is where the problem comes up. So I wrote, there are certain things my mind must do. And I think, and I thought at the time, the debate time when we were, you know, writing this song, it was becoming a song, Trey, I thought, didn't want to sing mind must together. Like the alliteration is sort of hard to, it's like a, you know, marble mouth, you know, it's hard to say.
My mind must, three in a row, right? My mind must.
Right, yeah. Three M's in a row. And so he changed it to, there's certain things my mind won't do. However, then I pointed out to him that the remainder of the stanza is, there's certain things my mind must do, and even though they're very few, the image glistens like a gem. Repairing is not one of them. So now, even though, so in other words, my mind doesn't have to repair things. It's not good at repairing things. And, you know, and in this case, we're talking about the image that's in my head, the recollection of the dream that I just had. And Trey, this is probably a little bit more complex, and this is probably why he decided not to talk about it on stage, because it gets a little technical. But basically, when Trey said, there's certain things my mind won't do, and, you know, you skip ahead, repairing is not one of them, there's a double negative. And so it makes it make no sense. Basically, what I'm saying is, my mind does not know how to repair this image. And with Trey saying, there's certain things my mind won't do, repairing is not one of them. He's basically saying, because of the double negative, that repairing is one of them. And so then when I continue and it says, so I'm awake though in my mind, the image that's so unrefined, meaning, you know, still blurry, is calling to me from the deep, tempting me to fall asleep. So basically my whole thing was, you know, you wake up in the middle of a dream and you want it back, and you can't quite figure out what it was, and the only way to get it back is to fall back asleep. And so it had to be must. And I think Trey finally agrees, because he actually sang it as must, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He sings it as must on the record, and as he did in Oakland the other night too. Yeah.
On what record?
It's on Farmhouse, right?
Well, I think he sings certain things my mind won't do on that. Isn't that correct?
I think I went back and listened to it on the studio. He does actually say must. He does, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then we're all in agreement, so there was no disagreement.
Yeah. I think maybe it's the original demo. I spun the original demo, because that's on Trampled by Lambs and Pecked by the Doves, and it's like so confusing. I think it might even be possible you guys actually sing two different words there.
Oh, I might be singing one and he might be singing the other because we're doing harmony.
Yeah, it could be. And then I don't know who's got the lyrics on Fishnet, but on Fishnet it does say there's certain things my mind won't do, but on Farmhouse, that's not what he sings. So we may be creating more mysteries here than actually clearing them up.
Well, it's supposed to be must, and I'm going to contact the powers that be at Fishnet to tell them to change that up. And I think Trey has come around to must, so I'm happy with that. It sounds like he's happy. So debate is over.
Right. it's such a cool tune. It always reminds me of that scene in Bittersweet Motel, back when there was not such a proliferation of so much great Phish video content out there all the time, with all the webcasts and concert films that they've done. Bittersweet was such like a go-to, like, you know, if there was a friend that was like kind of starting to get into Phish, we'd be like, oh, watch Bittersweet. I'd sit down and watch it with them for the sixth time or seventh time or whatever. and there's that scene in there where he uses sleep as like, you know, his sort of like fuck off to the critics that, you know, say all of our lyrics are goofy. You know, check out this one. Isn't this such a cool tune? And it's always struck me, he obviously likes the song so much, it's in the movie and it sticks around, but it never really shows up in Phish set list too much. And like, I was wondering if you sort of had any like theories, like, I don't think they've played it in like 6 or 7 years, but it's such a cool tune and like it could, you know, slide into first sets and stuff there. Do you have like any sort of ideas about why, say, like, because like I know on the one we were talking about it, like sort of like this short little song without like much of an instrumental section, you know, it's just sort of like the, you know, really short tune, but like what do you think it is about, say, like a Brian and Robert or a Strange Design that can sort of like more consistently find their way in a Phish set, where like a Sleep or a Talk sort of gets forgotten and doesn't show up there?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many of these type of songs where like it could be even Shade or Waste that fit into that slot. And for whatever reason, you know, maybe there's only two of them per night at a concert. So, you know, a song like Sleep kind of gets filed pretty far back in Trey's memory for whatever reason. You know, and I'm glad that it's pulled out for these acoustic tours where he kind of has to, you know, go through his inventory and figure out what's going to come across well acoustically. But yeah, I think when he's on stage and it's, you know, a full Phish show, he's gone through the set list and for whatever reasons, Sleep, you know, there's a couple songs that would fit there very well that just get left behind. And maybe it's, they don't come off as well in his mind, as a band song, as a full band song, as something like Waste or Shade.
There's a lot of cool things. There's such a fan favorite show, 228-2003 at the Nassau Coliseum, and it's like it's got this big epic tweezer that everyone loves, and it was the night they busted out Destiny Unbound, and overall the band just plays really well that night. But another sort of interesting thing about that show is that they drop Sleep right after like a really good bathtub gin in that first set. They take the breather, and the breather song is Sleep. So since it is such a Phish rarity, it's like another one of these sort of like forgotten cool things about that Nassau show in 03 that's such a fan favorite.
Right. Yeah, I think the fans would respond well to Sleep being dropped into the ballad slot or the slow slot, whatever you want to call it these days. I'd like Driver too.
Yeah. Yep. I think he played Driver the other night in Oakland too. That's a great one. That's one that I think like Driver has made its presence a bit more known than the sleeps and talks of the world. But yeah, if Trey's shown us anything sort of through this solo tour or like bringing back a song like Never and putting it on a Trey record after it had been disappeared for decades, it's like these songs never go away. They're always just waiting in the wings to come back someday.
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
All right, Tom. Well, I'm gonna let you go. But before we do, you want to tell the Jam Bass podcast listeners what's new with Under the Scales, your podcast, and the entire Osiris podcast network over there?
Well, thanks for asking. December 17th. I'm not sure when this podcast is coming out, but on December 17th, which is Monday, the last Under the Scales of season 2 is coming out, and it features Biz Archive, Scott Marks, and we're doing a
Hell
countdown
yeah.
of the top 5 New Years in 3.0, and it's really coming out really well.
Nice. Scott's a great guy. I bet that'll be super awesome.
Yep, it's been fun. It's a tough one to edit for a lot of reasons. There's more than 13 songs I'm cutting in here and there. But other than that, it wasn't nearly as difficult as the editing that I did on the one before, which was a Cosvote Voxed analysis.
Ah, yes, you went deep on all the people you called on that one.
Yeah, that one had 5 conversations and 12 songs. So, you, as you know, editing isn't the most straightforward, simple part of our job here as podcasters.
That is correct. We outsource it to our friend Jake, though, so it's not my problem.
Well, let's not make any more work for Jake.
All right, Tom. And speaking of New Year's, you will be at MSG this New Year's?
Absolutely. All four. I'll be there, and I'll see everybody there.
All right. I'll see you those second two. I'm going to come 30 and 31 this year.
Good deal. Well, I hope I was able to clear up sleep a little bit for everyone.
Yeah, like I said, I think we cleared up some things, but I think we probably made it a little more confusing too. But I think that's probably in the spirit of all things fish. So I think our work Perfect. Here is done.
Our work is done. All right, thanks so much, David.
All right, Tom, thanks. Cheers.
So long. Yep. Bye bye.
And that is it for this week's rundown. Up next, I chat with all four dudes in Pink Talking Fish as we discuss the art of the set list. All right, David here with the Jam Bass Podcast. I'm here with Richard, James, David, Zach, and Eric. Did I get it?
Yep.
All right. We are here. That's Billy Strings you hear in the background, and maybe Ron Artiste getting on his set here in a minute. So we are here with the guys in Pink Talking Fish, who have wrapped up two sets at Hangtown. Last night they played a late night set, and as every rock band loves to play, played a 2 p.m. afternoon set here here on Friday in front of a great crowd. So we're going to start off by talking art of the set list here. Eric says that's what this band is all about. So let's start off first with last night's late night set. When did you write the set list? How late does that stuff develop in general with this band, or how early?
Well, a first draft often happens well in advance, and anywhere from earlier that morning to a few days before.
We're getting air quotes from the Peanut Gallery on well in advance on this one.
But what winds up happening is whoever writes the first draft, most of the time it's me, but oftentimes it's some of these guys too, and we'll all just put our input into it. And so by the time we're getting close to showtime, there will be some changes that'll shift up, and that's when we get it finalized. Much to Dave's detriment, because he's the only guy who handwrites the set list. The rest of it we have digitally. And so if we handwrite it, then all of a sudden there's a change, then all of a sudden he's like, oh, man, I got to go do that again.
Okay. And on any given night, when things are finalized, how close to our written set list do we stay in Pink Talking
Fish?
We're
usually pretty true, but you never know what might happen, whether an improvisational jam goes long or whether we wind up just, you know, feeling a different direction. But, you know, we really like to make sure that we're giving people a good spread between the three acts that we pay tribute to. And also, we have a lot of really unique ideas by design, and we love to implement those. And so it's just a really fun thing to put this list together and then to realize it on stage.
In case any of our listeners don't already know, the three bands that they cover is the pop artist Pink, the band Talk, Fishbone. Yeah,
I was gonna say Real Big Fish.
A Real Big Fish. Yeah. All right, if you're gonna say funny stuff, you gotta say it into one of the two mics. So
Real Big Fish.
Yeah, we heard you. We heard you.
It's not funny. Set it in the mic.
So for sort of set list feel, you guys had to write a late night set list and then an afternoon set list. How much different approach goes into for example, the two sets you wrote here for Hangtown?
A late night vibe and an afternoon vibe are different animals, just emotionally.
So a lot of ballads in the late night set.
Exactly. We want to make sure that we're giving people a nice nightcap, putting them to sleep. And
Sunny Particle was known for as well.
Absolutely.
Back in the day.
Yeah, you know, we started and people just immediately just passed out. No, but you know, I mean, you guys can help out on this just on the different emotions of those. Someone get in on that.
Yeah, well, it's a lot like Eric said, you know, a lot of ballads at night. But you know, if you look at, like, if you... now it makes me want to pull up the set list, but if you look at like what we did last night,
pull it out if you need to.
I'll pull it out. We'll see what happens.
I'll say we'll edit this out, but we won't actually.
Yeah, no. So like last night, you know, like so we opened up with "Burning Down the House." That really, it's like we're going on at midnight. That really gets the party going and stuff like that. We did. The acts before us were very like bluegrassy oriented, so we figured that was a good opportunity to switch it up and to kind of like. Kind of rock out a little more, like, you know, we did, like, we pulled out like "Big Black Furry Creature from Mars," which is aggressively rocking, you know, and then into Astronomy and "Run Like Hell." There's definitely different categories. If you look at, like, what we did during the day today, it's a lot more upbeat, kind of major kind of stuff, like happy stuff that you might want to listen to when you. It's funny because anybody who was hanging at this festival probably saw us, and then either stayed up, whatever. The music stopped at that point, went to bed, and then you just wake up, and then we're playing again, like, right away, basically. So you fall asleep to us, and then you wake up to us,
it's
basically.
It's all one set.
Right.
It's all one
right.
song.
Kind of. I guess so. But there is definitely thought put into playing a late-night set specifically. Like, you know, for example, like, we had some songs in the late-night set. There's a lot of times, like, you know, there could be a song like "Shine On You Crazy Diamond" or "Echoes" or some of the Floyd stuff. That you don't want to do too much of the slow stuff. You don't want to lose people in a late night set. You want to keep people going and keep people moving. You know what I mean? And then in the daytime set, like, you look at stuff like "Nothing But Flowers," like some of the Talking Head stuff is very upbeat and gets people moving. And that's, I mean, we're definitely conscious of that. And there's some thought put into that for sure.
So it's not there on the set list that we're looking at on your phone, but there was part of "Bug" in something you guys were playing today,
in Fearless,
right?
Yeah.
Is that a constant in the Pink Talking Fish version of Fearless, or is that just sometimes? How does this work?
Part of this concept that's really fun is finding connections, finding within just the pieces of music, things that whether it's a part of a song that can interconnect with another, or whether it's compatible grooves to blend in and out of. And Fearless is one song where there's a handful of Fish songs that can work in there. The ones we've done most are "Bug" and "Prince Caspian." We've done "Waste" as well.
I was gonna say both in G, but then we lost it on "Waste."
Yep.
Okay.
And so there's a, you know, there's a few other tunes like that. "Thank You for Sending Me an Angel," Talking Head song, in the middle of the guitar solo, we go into a piece of "Runaway Jim" in there.
So there's some of this stuff that is just like implied, but then I was sort of on the drive up here, I was looking at your fantasy tour number of songs played this year. There's some that are the actual song title is like a full-on medley or a mashup. So the stuff you guys are talking about right now isn't that, but like one of them is like "Tennessee Jet" and "Ocelot." Is
that's
that right?
That's a full-on mashup.
Okay.
Right there.
How did that? I mean. I get it. The when "Ocelot" came out, it was definitely a very Grateful Dead-sounding song. But how do you guys go about constructing a full-on sort of mashup like that? Here we go.
Well, I think you nailed it right on the head. As they sound very similar, so it's about finding the ways to blend the two songs together. And I guess ultimately make it surprising for the audience to be hearing one song and then be snapped into another. And then go back and forth and really try to stretch the limits of the arrangements of each one of those songs.
Great. Saw "Ocelot" on there, saw like "No Men in No Man's Land" on there. Of the three bands that you actually cover in the band, only one of them is still writing new tunes. How do you guys decide which ones are kind of Pink Talking Fish worthy and which ones sort of are not yet going to make it into the repertoire?
Well, you know, all the new Talking Head songs that are being written right now, we just got to be real careful.
Eric. No, it's real. Like, how do we decide which songs we're gonna play and which songs we're gonna? Is that what you're asking?
When Fish writes new tunes,
how do we decide which ones?
Yeah, which ones are gonna make
it's
it in? Which
really,
ones aren't?
We just kind of talk about which ones we want to tackle next. I mean, luckily there's an almost endless amount of songs, and it's just about which ones. A, we're either really excited to play, or B, like, work well with what we do in, like, the system. Like, there's definitely thought. Eric talks about, like, you know, I'm not sure if this song is you know, top priority for what we do. And then there's certain songs that work really well. So, I, you know, we think about it, but then it's up to a group vote of which ones we're excited to learn and stuff like that. So, if that answers that question for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Some songs really fit our concept. No Man's Land is a perfect example. When that, you know, that's a relatively new song, and when that came out, that was the first song on that new batch that we tackled. A, because it's a fun groove. B, because it's the nature of the groove we can jam right into it off of a Talking Heads tune, or out of it if we space out at the end, which we just did today, and we went into Money on our set. We can just, you know, take that into like a psychedelia area and transition into something Pink Floyd oriented, and so that works really well within there. And so, whereas some songs, it's interesting, we learned the song Rocky Top by a request off of a private event that we did. Ah. But that normally would not have been on our radar to put on the forefront, because there's so many Fish songs to learn, just because it doesn't necessarily fit our concept as much. Now that we have it, you know,
I was going to say, are you keeping it around
fun.
Since
yeah,
I spent
yeah.
the time learning it?
I'm just going to cut in here quick. Eric, I'd like to actually have this conversation with you live.
This is good.
So, Pink Floyd actually released their 15th album, The Endless River, and the last track on the record was called Louder Than Words.
Yep.
And we learned that song, and it was fantastic. It blended, it
yes.
fitted the style, and we played it twice. And this was...
yeah, well, those two times were really good.
And, you know, going back to set list, we got to get that in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but that was really cool.
Eric, why didn't it make it back into more of these set lists?
Yeah,
let's,
I blame...
This is the airing of grievances part of the Jam Bass podcast.
No, it's very simple. It's basically because of our drummer, Zach Berwick. He's slightly afraid of that song. And
I couldn't be sitting closer to you.
No, but that
is
was.
Is he scared of Limb by Limb too? Do you guys play Limb by Limb, or is he?
No, I like that. Eric just can't handle Louder Than Words. That's not my problem.
No, but it was really fun when we did the week that album came out.
Okay.
We had a show and we played it, and it was awesome. It was and it was really cool for, you know, the three people who knew what it was.
All right, so we'll look ahead to November set list. Or actually, wait, you guys have a fucking show in New Jersey tomorrow?
We
is
do.
Is that right?
Yeah,
so
well, if we make it into the Northeast here.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, our editorial director, Scott Bernstein, got on an earlier flight to Chicago to go see Fish because of said Northeaster.
We have a midnight flight out now and tonight. And
out of San Francisco?
We are, what?
Sacramento.
Sacramento. Yeah. And we are flying right into the heart of it. So
I looked at it on the way up here. I think it's, you guys are kind of crucial to whatever this event is. Like your name is in it, right? It's like,
yeah, we're headlining it.
Yeah.
So we're flying right in the storm, so when we don't make it,
yeah,
this is it.
Yeah.
This is the last you'll hear of us, basically.
Oh, geez, then you're never gonna play that Floyd tune again.
No,
like,
well,
it's really
Zach,
never gonna make it to
that's
us.
Right.
Zach's gonna leave this
now.
Interview by doing a solo a cappella version of it before we go.
Oh, okay. So that's good. That's good.
If you want me to start now, it's like 8 or 9 minutes.
That was good. Now we need to clear the rights for it since it's a cover, you know. So
I try to differentiate from the original. I feel like that was different.
All right. You guys have played some shows with the Giant Country Horns. How did that come about, and were you guys playing those same charts that Fish played in those?
Shout out to Dad, Carl Gearhard.
Actual father?
No.
Father figure?
Yeah, he's a father figure.
So,
all right.
By the way, it's Richard James Gearhard.
Richard James Gearhard, yeah.
Giant Country Horns, yeah. You know, I mean, we love collaborating in the Phish community. You know, it's a, you know, I mean, we do this just out of the, we're huge fans of all three of these bands, and so to be able to integrate with some of them is just such a treat. So, you know, the Giant Country Horns hadn't gotten together in over 15 years, and we were able to facilitate that with a show in Boston and
Paradise.
At the Paradise, yep. And we opened up with the Landlady, and then when it was done, we basically went, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Giant Country Horns."
This is unannounced
was,
that they what? Were? Is this unannounced?
No, no, oh, we announced it. Oh, okay, okay. We announced okay. it. And,
but they still were very excited.
Then yeah, smoke everywhere yeah. and a platform lifted from the floor and light shining down on them.
Is this before or after Phish started playing Landlady on its own again? Did you guys lead the charge for them?
Oh, they did that because they did start
they
doing
did it
that
a
again.
Couple
That's
of
right.
times and now it's gone away again.
I think it was after. I think it was probably after.
We'll just say you guys did it first, and then Phish was like...
No, that's what I meant. That's what I meant was we
Phish
did it
was
first.
After.
We
yeah.
did it first
cool.
again after they already did it.
Cool. Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Right.
So Grippo came out to one of our shows at Nectar's, and he brought the original stash chart that he had, and so that was fun. So yeah, so we hacked through that one.
Really, we were just like sound checking, and then he walks up, he's like, "What's up, guys? I got my folder, I got my charts." He was just like ready to go, basically.
It does sound like Dave Grippo.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he's the man.
They had a funny story about how after the tour. All the charts, all the horn charts went into Fishman's van, and they were never seen again.
Oh.
That was it. So the
Way
fact
back
that,
when,
the,
you mean?
Yeah. yeah. So the fact that they actually, that Dave had a stash chart, I'm guessing it must have been rewritten for some reason.
He stashed it away.
But huh? I just got to give a shout out to Matt Wayne. He's a he's a horn player out in New York City. And when we played the Paradise with the Giant Country Horns, he became the fourth member for the night, and Matt actually went back and listened to all the recordings, and he recharted
the stuff.
Everything by ear.
Yep.
And he's one of the most impressive musicians I've ever, you know, gotten a chance to play with, and
great hair.
He's got great hair. Yeah.
Good player, great look.
Yeah, yeah.
We're playing with him tomorrow if we make the gig.
Awesome. That's right. Yeah.
And it's you're opening with the Floyd tune.
We're also playing again with the Giant Country Horns in December.
Okay.
We're taking it out to Colorado, and we're doing two shows. We're doing a show in Fort Collins, and we're doing a show in Denver. So that it's going to be just really fun just having that happen again, especially out in Colorado where there's such great, you know, Phish history out there.
So, to some degree, those set lists probably already written because there's a lot more coordination involved when you're bringing in
those guys would like to think so.
Yes. They should be, but...
They totally are, is what it seems like.
You're listening,
over here.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, do we miss any big things on Cellus? We talked about your mashups. We talked about new tunes. Talked about who writes them. Is there any personality to our set lists that are not written by Eric? Is there any you look at a set list and
I personally think they're all dull.
Right.
But
yeah. Does anyone have anything that they think they bring to the table when Eric is not at the helm of the first?
No, we just let him write them all, and if the show sucks, then it sucks, and it's his fault. You know? And if it's good, it's probably
because
we
because
played
the playing,
the
playing
really
was really
well.
Yeah,
so it has nothing really to do with good. Eric, really.
It's awesome when
let's hear what Eric
it
has
is.
To
it's
say
awesome when they write when they write lists because it's something fresh. It's, you know, I have a certain way of thinking. That, you know, at a certain point we're a little bit used to. You know, these guys know me and my ideas of the concept well enough to kind of know where some things are coming from, even though I'm still coming up with fresh ideas. But, you know, one of these guys will come up with something and it's a completely different direction. And so it's really great and it's fun.
Yep. I mean, the rest of us, we write set lists sometimes, but for the most part, Eric writes them and then... We rip them apart and then adjust them and put different things in and stuff like that.
Right. Zach is an expert at ripping apart my set lists.
Sure.
I love it. Yeah. I think it's great.
Other than, like, when Tom Petty passed away, you guys started playing a Petty tune for a little while. Is that correct?
How often do we do things like that?
Outside of that, what are the circumstances that a song that, say, isn't an original from one of these three bands or a Fish cover...
How do they make it
into the Pink Talking Fish repertoire? What are the criteria? How does it pass the board of directors?
I mean, we've done that. We did that with Bowie and with Prince and with somebody that passes away or something like that, that's very impactful and has
a jam band tradition.
Has that influence on us, then you kind of want to do something like that. And lots of bands do that. When that happens,
that
you
goes
look around.
Beyond jam band, I think.
Sure.
It does, absolutely.
You have a musical great out there, and there's people
I bet
who are
the
jam,
I bet the jam
them.
Bands are most likely to so quickly cover the recently
sure.
deceased.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. Yep. But there are other instances, right? There are some tunes in your guys' repertoire that are not of someone who just passed away or one of those three tunes?
Yes, we've done some concepts within our concepts. Some of it has been adding a fourth band. We've done it with The Dead. We did that for GD50 for some shows we do with Live
for
Live
an entire
music.
Show, gotcha.
And we've done it with David Bowie, with Michael Jackson, with Almonds.
And then do the tunes sometimes then stick around?
Yes,
got it.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
And for the most part, we're doing the three main acts, but we'll throw curveballs in there every once in a while. You know, we love playing
Ooh,
some
curveball
of those.
Too soon. Katie is triggered over here.
We love playing some of those, like Almonds, we'll throw in Jessica every once in a while, or Whipping Post, and it's just a blast to do it. Sometimes we'll play a private event, and they'll just be like a completely different thing.
Yes, on the drive up here, I found a song that had been played once, and I clicked on it, and it was from somebody's wedding in June. It was like all the Turquoise guys were there, too, so I forget what song it was.
Yeah, like
we played some My Morning Jacket recently at a private event, because somebody... That's what they requested. It was like, okay, yeah.
We did Divide.
And you're not just going to learn it once. Yeah.
Oh, we actually did something cool. What was it?
Yeah, we did Divided
you
Sky.
You actually did something
yeah, we
cool?
Yeah, we actually did something cool.
Well, this, you decide. This is the one, this, we'll tell the story.
This was the one
decide.
Thing. It was Divided Sky into One Big Holiday back into Divided Sky. It was really neat.
I'd have to hear it, but it sounds pretty cool.
It was a lot of fun. So, So, you know, it's between that, you know, we do albums.
Yeah.
And those are really fun to do.
The Thing Tomorrow is an album, right?
What's that?
Is The Thing Tomorrow?
It's Dark Side of the Moon.
It's Dark Side of the Moon.
And we're doing that in Vegas as well.
The always classic Sacramento Asbury Park Vegas routing that you guys are on right now.
I mean, it's like, you want to rock and roll or not?
Shout out to our booking agent, Mike Weinstein. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate you. the Vegas thing is great. We're doing... We're doing two nights. We're doing the first night. We're doing the fourth band. We're adding Pink Talking Fish's Bowie, just in honor of Fish having done Ziggy Stardust for the last time they
were
there.
And then the second night, whatever record they cover, you'll then learn in 2 days and do.
Even better, actually,
as long as it's
opinion.
Definitely Dark Side.
Second night is Dark Side, and it's the exact 20-year anniversary
when
they did Dark Side in
That's
Utah.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So,
the East Center.
Which I'm still kicking myself for not going to, because I could have.
Yes, as I think a lot of people that were at those Vegas shows. Work.
That's the point. Yep.
So
that's the point. Make
fun.
Them hurt. Make
that's
them fight.
Right. We've done the Capitol Theater twice. Two years ago, we did Stop Making Sense. And we had a bunch of special guests. It was a three and a half hour marathon performance. Last year, or I guess it's this year, we did Pink Floyd's The Wall. And so we're about to announce this. Here's a little... I'm not sure when this is airing. But,
maybe as early as next Thursday, if that gives you any pause to announce.
Well, we have something very special we're going to be announcing.
Say it, and then we'll edit it out here.
So we're going to be announcing our next Capitol Theater play, and for year number three, sort of chapter three on this, we're doing Fish's Junta.
And with Union Federal and everything,
yep,
the whole fucking
yep.
oh boy!
And so it's gonna be—it's a monster. It's a beast of an album. And so,
how many of those tunes have you guys not already done? You've done
a good handful. Good handful.
What's that? No comment.
A good handful we have not.
I mean,
done,
what's
so
learning
it's
a song
really
for
us?
Yeah. I mean,
those early Fish songs are the easiest too. They're like just a few chords.
We're really just gonna bail on the very last second.
But what's great about it too is we're actually calling it Junta Circus, and we're going to be adding circus acts throughout, and we're going to transform the whole place into a circus. It's going to be a spectacle.
Sounds like fun. We'll edit it out if they're not if you guys aren't ready to announce this yet, and this will be in a great tradition of doing this. We've actually never mentioned this on the podcast, but we were interviewing Chris Robinson, and I was talking to him about As the Crow Flies, and he was like, "Yeah, super excited to have Marcus King out there. We're going to do 3 weeks," and I was like, "None of that has been announced." Like, like, you have one festival show announced and nobody knows who's in the band. He's like, "Oh, well, then we can't talk about that." So we'll have to play that tape someday. Cool. All right. So we got Ron Ortiz going on right now, and he's going to start bleeding into our mics more because he's a little louder than Billy Strings was here. So we're going to let these guys go because they have their last ever airplane ride to get on before they...
We're going to go watch the Red Sox before that.
Oh, yeah. We are all Red Sox. That's right. We all Red Sox fans here? Yeah. All right. Well, this is... the World Series will be over by the time this happens, and things will have to have gone very south for our Boston Red Sox.
That's right.
So hopefully this is an early congratulations, and if not, I think we should blame Eric for.
If anything happens, we'll just edit this whole part out. Right?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
That's going to be a lot of editing on this one, Jake. I am sorry. There's so much edits on this.
We're actually going to blame you because we should be watching the game and not doing this interview.
The game has not. Oh no, it has. The game started 8 minutes ago. All right, we gotta go.
Oh my God!
See you guys later.
It's louder than words, this thing that we do. Louder than words, the way it unfolds. It's louder than words, the song of our heart.
And that's it for this week's episode of the Jam Bass Podcast. Seriously, thanks again for listening. Whether this week was your first episode or you've been a loyal listener for a year now, we truly appreciate it. And we hope you are entering into or are already enjoying a wonderful holiday season. We hope your New Year's Eve plans include live music, if you want them to anyway. We want to give a big thanks to Jake Alexander for always helping us put together this podcast. In addition to mixing our audio every couple of weeks, that's Jake's band Clangin' and Bangin', you hear at the beginning and end of every podcast. Check them out. They rule. Also, thanks to the good folks at Telefunken for these wonderful microphones. We wouldn't sound like the angels we do without them. To the entire team here at Jambase Court, Steve, Scotty, AK, Marcus, Kyle, and John, thanks for doing what you do. And to all of our contributing writers and photographers, developers, family, friends, pets, you all make it happen. OG crew Andy, Ted, D, and Mike, you guys rock. All the best to all of you, and as always, go see live music.